20 WGN.
It's Amy Duke here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you so much for spending part of your Saturday with me. I hope you are enjoying some of the beautiful weather outside because it is warm and it is lovely on this long weekend. Happy Independence Day almost to everyone. All right, my friends, still plenty to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch today. We are going to be talking about recent grads and how and their struggle with getting work. It's kind of a catch-22 there with needing experience, but needing to get that experience also. We're also going to be talking about employing people who are trying to make a fresh start after being released from incarceration. And a little bit later in the show, we're going to hear from the Genius Guru. She's back to give us some great, great advice on making our careers and our workplaces suck a little bit less. So she'll be here with us about 12:45. But right now, I would like to talk about the phenomenon of athleisure wear, and that is, of course, wearing our workout clothes to workplaces. And here to discuss that with us is Kim Bassine. He wrote about how yoga pants and other athleisure type of clothing, it's edging closer and closer to business casual and how companies are trying to accelerate that process. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, so talk us through this and how did it really start? Because I think there's a sea of difference between someone kind of maybe cleverly disguising, a nice workout tank top over, you know, with a cardigan over it or something like that. But then there's a whole sea of things. There's a range of that because I think the other end of that spectrum is where we see people wearing sweatpants with words on the butt, going to work and that and things like that. Kind of talk us through the range of things and how this has really started entering the workplace.
Yeah, so there's absolutely a spectrum there. If you're at a formal workplace that requires people that has a strict dress code, it's really hard to wear some of this athleisure stuff in the workplace. But as we get into a grayer zone where they just say, you know, wear something kind of business casual, casual is okay, just don't wear shorts or something like that. You can pair things like stretchy leggings with a button down or something, and it works. And this is something that is a pretty recent phenomenon. Like, I guess in the past 5 or 6 years, since athletic wear really caught on outside of the gym with the rise of Lululemon and such, people started wearing those kinds of clothes on the street, and then they started wearing those clothes in the office. So as long as you're not going against whatever dress code is there, it's possible to pair these things.
Well, and it seems too like both workplaces and manufacturers of this type of clothing seem to be recognizing that and really trying to make that work a little bit more than perhaps so people don't necessarily have to try to disguise it to try to. So it seems certainly like workout wear companies in particular are trying to make their attire look a little not necessarily dressier, but look like the kind of basic pieces that you can layer and that you can dress up. So you don't necessarily have to bring a whole other set of clothing to go work out after work.
Think about it this way. When athletic wear companies when their stuff started to be worn on the street, this opened an entirely new market for them. They used to be limited to the gym. You would just buy you would buy performance leggings and then wear them to yoga class or something, and you go home. Now, if you're styling that stuff with everyday wear, it opens this whole new market. So the next step is going into the workplace. Now that you're already wearing it on a sidewalk, why not enter the workplace with that same attire? So, yes, lately companies have been trying to convince people that it's okay to wear like a mesh jacket into the workplace, and they're giving people style tips in order to convince them to do that.
It'll be interesting to see how all of that kind of plays out. I am very interested in, because I keep getting these Facebook ads for it, but there's a product that is It looks like dress pants that you would just regular, you know, dress pants that you would wear to work, but they are in fact yoga pants that are cleverly disguised as dress pants. And I think that's a great example of someone who's really, really trying to make bridge the gap between workplace and after work workout to be very seamless.
Right. There are some products like that try to bridge a gap by just replicating the aesthetic that you would wear. So there's a company called Ministry of Supply, and they make performance suits for men. And they're very stretchy. They did this PR stunt where one of the founders ran a marathon in one of their suits to prove that you could do anything in these suits. And so that is a little different because it's not challenging any kind of long held corporate beliefs because it just looks like a regular item.
Well, that's interesting that you say that about the suits, because it does seem like this applies to women a lot more than men.
Right, right. Because men tend to not wear really tight leggings or that sort of thing in general or in the workplace.
Right. But I think even with tops, I think women can probably get away with it a little more because we tend to layer more in a business casual environment than, you know, a tank top and a cardigan is probably not what a lot of men are wearing. I think in more casual environments, men are probably wearing like a golf shirt or something like that.
And that also allows for more creativity for women to pair things and match all kinds of different stuff for their work garb.
Well, and I think this is, I mean, I'm in favor of this. At first, I wasn't, because I think it, you know, we don't want people looking sloppy at work. You want to look, you know, you want to dress for the role that you want and those kind of things. And I'm a big believer in that. But I also recognize the value of, if you don't have to bring a gym bag or if you don't have to go home and change, you are much more likely to go work out. You really, really are. And I really think there's a lot of value in that. So I think this is really interesting. And I think it's very interesting how companies, both workplaces and manufacturers, are responding to that. So I imagine some utopian future where we can just work out in anything we own. It'll be great.
One day.
All right. Well, thanks so much. Kim Basine, fashion and retail reporter at Bloomberg. Thanks for joining us today on the program.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right, my friends, we will be back here in just a bit. We're talking about struggles of recent college graduates. There's a big catch-22 there, and we're going to be talking about that here in just a bit on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us this long holiday weekend. I hope you are safely, responsibly planning to celebrate, and I hope you are enjoying the beautiful weather today because it is lovely, and it looks like it is going to be lovely for most of the weekend, but we will keep you updated with the weather. My friends, okay, still lots to do here on the Wintrust Business Lunch today. And you know, there is a catch-22 for the recent college graduate because they have just finished their education and they want to go out there and they're eager to work. They want to go get a job, do all those things. And yet, so often, those jobs require experience. But how do you get experience if you're just starting out? It is this big old catch-22. So joining us now on the program is Jeffrey Salingo, author of There Is Life After College. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here today.
Well, thanks for joining us and spending part of your Saturday with us. Well, so talk us through this catch-22, because it is kind of the age-old problem, but it seems like the ante has been upped a little bit in such a competitive job market where even entry-level jobs require a good deal of experience. So how are people cracking that code?
Well, you're no doubt about right about that. I mean, as you described it, entry-level jobs requiring experience because most employers can get a higher level of talent, which really hurts new college graduates. So what we're now seeing them do is work through these so-called bridge programs or boot camps, and a number of them have cropped up in recent years, places like General Assembly, which offers 10 to 12-week courses in everything from project management to computer coding. You have even these three-week boot camps that offer liberal arts college graduates business skills. In other words, you know, how to prepare budget documents and do presentations, you know, pretty hard, very specific skills that employers want, but most students coming out of college are not going to have unless they had a specific internship or something.
Sure. But do these boot camps fill that gap? Because I think you can study it to death, but I think there's something to be said for going out there and really experiencing it and really having that real world experience. So does this fully fill that gap?
Oh, no, it doesn't. And, you know, one of the main findings of the book is that among large employers now, 75% of their new hires are actually coming from their intern pools, right? So they are not even recruiting outside of their internships, which means that if you graduate graduate college without an internship, you're going to have a much harder time finding a job. And in fact, many of the students I interviewed for my book had actually found their first full-time job from their internship, during their junior year, and they even had a job well before graduation as a result.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for not only having someone, you know, proving your work in a workplace and having someone, you know, having a position where a company can vouch for you through an internship. But I think there's also so much to be said for having that network and building those skills. And the interns that I have seen that are the most successful tend to go into an internship, even a very short-term one, and really maximize that with the networking and really, really contact a lot of people. Is that something that you found in your research as well?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. And again, the key is how students use those internships. You know, it may not lead to a job, but the networking aspect of that. Whenever I met students who had successfully launched after college, you know, I asked them, well, how did you get to where you are? And almost all inevitably, they told me about a coworker, a classmate, you know, a faculty member or somebody else, an alum of an institution or a college who helped them get to where they are today. So it's navigating that network that is so critical. And employers like that, too, because it demonstrates to them that students know the so-called soft skills, right? The ability to communicate and problem solve and work in teams, which most employers are looking for today. And unfortunately, they think the bachelor's degree doesn't provide that.
So do we think that, I mean, are universities hearing this and seeing this, and are they stepping up their game? If there's so many students are graduating and still needing to grab all these extra skills, are universities starting to come to the mat on that and adjust their curriculum?
Some are, but not all of them. You know, a number of them, like the University of Cincinnati and Drexel in Northeastern, provide co-ops, you know, as part of the undergraduate curriculum. In other words, a work experience. You know, others are Denison in Ohio, and some others have revamped, Boston College have revamped their undergraduate curriculum. But too many colleges still see it's not part of their job to help students get a job. And so they really don't think this is their responsibility.
Mm-hmm. I really do think there was a piece that is mentioned in the Washington Post called Revature that is really interesting. And it's kind of like a job, you know, it's these kind of boot camps that you're describing. But then it also works like a temp agency, which is a really interesting model. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Revature is a company. So, you know, I mentioned another boot camp called General Assembly. Well, you go through, you know, 10 to 12 week course at General Assembly, and then you have to look for a job. The difference with Revature is they essentially employ you, much like a temp agency, like a Manpower might. But then they give you the training you need to get a full-time job. And so basically you spend the first 10 to 12 weeks of the quote-unquote job training, and then they place you with major companies that they have relationships with, and guarantee you a full-time job after this 10 to 12 week training piece. So what they basically have done is take the training out of the hands of the student, out of the hands of the colleges, and even out of the hands of the employer in this part, and they guarantee that after you get this training, you're going to get a job.
Well, that is a really interesting model. What is the application process for that? It seems like
it's pretty competitive. Yeah. First of all, you have to have a college degree in order to even apply for this. There's an extensive online course that you have to take to kind of make sure that you're ready. The course is free, but they want to make sure you're ready. And then it's competitive to get in because essentially they're guaranteeing you a job, so they want to make sure you have enough basic skills, but you don't need, you know, a lot of these are computer and IT related jobs. You know, more than a quarter of the students have no experience at all in information technology, but they still accept them. But they really want to know, do you have the basic skills needed to get the job after you go through this training?
Sure. And what other new things are people doing? You know, the students that you talked to in your book, what were the biggest surprises that you found doing that research of new techniques they were employing and things like that that were really getting them, kind of a leg up on the competition?
Well, you know, so the biggest one was one I mentioned earlier, which was the internship. And the more internships you have, the better off you're going to be. But the other thing that I don't think most people think about, especially even as they're looking at college when they're 18, is the amount of debt they have. One thing I found is that the less debt you have at graduation, the better off you are in the job market. And most parents and students don't think there's a connection between those two things. But think about it. If you graduate with a lot of debt at graduation, you don't have a lot of flexibility in the job market. It forces you to take a job that you may not really want or need, or it may not be good for your career because it pays the bills, pays that student loan bill. You think you're only going to stay in it for 6 to 12 months, but then, you know, 2 or 3 years later, you're still there. You're in your mid-20s, and now you're competing against a recent college graduate. So one thing that I really warn students and their parents is, as you're looking at colleges, to make sure that you think about how much debt you're going to take on as an undergraduate.
That is very, very good advice. And I know, especially right now when we're in such a climate of just so much student debt, and that's just such a stressful thing on so many households, is that long-term student debt. So that's a very, very good point. All right, my friends, check this book out. It is called There Is Life After College. It is by Jeffrey Salingo. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, no problem. Thanks. It was great to be here.
Thank you. All right, my friends, we are going to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff. And when we come back, we are going to be talking with the Genius Guru. She is going to help us make our workplaces suck so much less. She's good like that. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you so much for spending part of your Saturday with us, especially on this long weekend. But even though it is a long weekend and so many of us are off work, so many of you are off work anyway, that does not mean there's not still a ton of stuff to talk about in the business world. And there was a very interesting piece recently in the New York Times, and it is all about this idea that once someone has paid their debt to society, obviously employment is high on their list of things to do after they are released from incarceration. But as you can imagine, that can be quite an issue. And so here to talk about that with us from the New York Times is Mark Obi. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So talk us through this piece a bit, because you looked at some very specific cases, but generally, you know, I know that this has been a point of conversation. I know Atlanta and a few other places have tried to get the ban the box movement of getting that that box off of job applications that says, have you been convicted of a felony, so that just that first round of contact can go a little smoother and people can, you know, get their foot in a door and get an interview. But where else are we seeing this show up the most?
Yeah, ban the box is one of the main topics of the conversation. And whenever we talk, whenever policymakers talk about improving reentry, that is the process by which former prisoners reenter society, employment is always one of the first things anybody talks about. It just stands to reason that if somebody has a good job, they're going to succeed more, it's a better bet that they'll succeed than if somebody's unemployed and they go back to what they were doing. But the problem with that, historically, has been that that's about as far as the thinking has gone. And so we throw them into the job market with this terrible black cloud hanging over them. And we're talking, by the way, about 700,000 new people per year coming out of prisons, and approximately 70 million people in this country walking around with some sort of criminal record, an arrest or a conviction. So we throw them into the job market and we just say, get a job. And so, of course, they gravitate to low pay, low skill, short-term jobs. There's a ton of turnover. And it's one of the main reasons why recidivism, the rate at which people reoffend, is so horribly high. You know, up to three-quarters of people who come out of prison are bound to go back or at least get in some sort of serious trouble. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're not employed. So it's a major, major problem.
Yeah. And I mean, this really starts to speak to more of a movement towards the idea of restorative justice than just go to jail, get out, and then good luck to you. This seems like a lot more supportive route to go. And the Bureau of Prisons even has suggested that maybe they want to improve and they want to help this transitional period too.
Yeah, the Bureau of Prisons has made positive moves recently, and there's a lot of positive talk. But what I wrote about was the lack of business input, of market savvy in this conversation. Because if we're not including employers in the training of people to be trained to do things that are actually in demand in the marketplace, then there's a disconnect. You know, if everybody comes out able to be a short order cook or make license plates, what good does that do society? It doesn't do the former prisoners any good. It doesn't do businesses any good. And if all we're telling businesses is ban the box and please hire these folks because it's good for society, they're not unsympathetic, but it doesn't appeal to their primary interest, which is improving the bottom line. So I wrote about this program in St. Louis where they have figured out how to appeal to businesses based on what they really need, finding out through market data which kinds of jobs were in demand in that market and would be in demand in the next couple of years, training people for those jobs, connecting them to the employers who are willing to hire them, and what do you know, the retention rates go way up, and these employees really want the jobs, and they turn out to be really good employees, better sometimes than people who are hired right off the street. So market appeal really has worked to everyone's advantage, the businesses and the former prisoners.
And so if there are employers listening right now, what could they do in their own small to mid-sized businesses to try to be more, you know, welcoming, accommodating, and even just connecting with programs that are seeking to help people become employed after incarceration?
Well, there's a lot of good information out there about hiring these folks and realizing that the vast majority of people who have made mistakes, whether they're minor mistakes or major mistakes, the vast majority want to fly straight when they come out. And if they are given a chance, they will be loyal employees and will try really, really hard to stay out of trouble because they don't want to go back to where they were. One source of really good information is the Council of State Governments, which is conducting roundtable discussions with businesses around the country right now to talk about the things that I just mentioned, about putting business intelligence into this reentry process. So that's one good place to go online, Council of State Governments Justice Center, for more information. But just keeping an open mind about how people are better than their worst mistake, and that they often end up being surprisingly good employees when they are given the right tools, the right circumstances, and are given a chance.
I like that. People are better than their worst mistake. Hear, hear. I think that applies to many, many different situations. And my friends, I will be sure and tweet out links to all the things that he is mentioning as we wrap up the program so that you can check those out. I'm already seeing tweets of people asking for that link again, but I will be sure and share those. Thank you so much, Mark Obi, for being with us today. And I will also tweet out your story from the New York Times. There's so much great information in it about reentering the workforce and how employers and Department of Corrections and all these different bodies can work together to help people to move on after they have paid their debt to society. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you, Amy.
Have a great day. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we are talking with the Genius Guru. Gina Murata is here, and she is going to help us think about how we can make our workplace suck a little bit less. We'll be back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for spending part of your Saturday with us. I hope you are outside and enjoying the beautiful weather of this long holiday weekend. I think most of you probably get Monday, sometimes Tuesday off. And I'm hearing a lot of people say things like, oh, I needed this long weekend. Work sucks, right? We're all saying things like that. But look, it doesn't have to. And so to help us think about that, let us get some freedom away from a stifling office, things like that. A stifling office culture is our good friend, the Genius Guru, Gina Murata. She is back with us to talk about making work suck a little bit less. Because as people, especially in summer, they go, oh, I wish I could go on vacation. Oh, I wish I could get out of here. But she helps people find work they really, really love or make a situation they're in really, really, really awesome. Welcome back to the program, Gina.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here to bring more independence to people this weekend.
I love this. I love this. Okay. So I think a lot of people think about this topic and they go, yeah, well, what I really want is to just win the lottery and be done and not do this anymore. But I I'm going to call shenanigans on that, because I think what people really want is just work that's meaningful, that they can get out of bed in the morning and be looking forward to doing, really. And instead of just, because I think if you won the lottery and you just were like laying around and doing nothing, you'd be bored to death, right?
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Amy, you win a prize.
Sweet.
Absolutely. People don't come to me asking, hey, Gina, I want to just live on the beach. They come to me saying, let me qualify this for a minute. I do occasionally get people saying, I just want to make a lot of money so I can do whatever it is that I really want, right? So what people are looking for is to do something meaningful in their lives. They want to tap into their own best talents. They want to do what they're passionate about, whatever that is. It's very individualized, whatever they are passionate about. And they want to make a difference for other people or in some particular area of the world that matters to them.
Which is where you come in. And I think in your business that you do, you talk a lot about finding your genius. And I think that's probably the genius, right? Of what you're really good at, what you really want, and all those things.
Absolutely. We all have an inner genius. And we may be connected to it. Sometimes we're not. So it's a matter of knowing whether you know what that thing is. I would say everybody does know, but sometimes it's buried.
Sure. Or sometimes I think people don't realize you can do it for a living.
Yes.
People make it a hobby or something like that.
Yes.
So what can people do? I know there's like a long coaching process and lots of work that you do with the people that you work with, but the short version of what could people do right now to start moving closer to having that freedom and doing the things that they really want that makes their heart and soul very happy in the workplace?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you the very first step.
Okay.
The very first step is to ask for what you want. And asking for what you want could look like asking for a very specific promotion in your company. It could be asking for simply career happiness. It could be asking for the tools and resources to start your real dream. But the first step is always to ask. And there's magic in this. It's not like people shy away from following their dreams because they think it means I have to quit my job tomorrow. But when you ask, you actually engage a larger process that begins. I have a client who I met with yesterday. Thursday was the last day of her job as a tax accountant. And it was about a 2-year process of her declaring, I want to do something different. And she had no idea at that time what it was. But through a process, when she asked, when she started to believe, then she started to notice signs of in her life, well, what could it be that I would do? What would I love that I would do? And the process began from there. So number one, ask.
Well, there's a lot of power in putting it out there, I think.
Yes.
Just when you start talking about something, it's amazing how, you know, serendipity happens. People go, oh, that's funny. My brother does that for a living. Let me connect you, or things like that. It just happens.
It absolutely happens. It happened to me when I made a big career change. I see it happen time and time again with my clients. Once you own and begin to embrace that desire, then what you truly desire does start to show its way to you.
And you can read about this career change on her website, GinaMorata.com. But it is not a small one. It is really a significant story about your journey from criminal defense attorney of very high profile cases, which sounds super stressful to me, and then moving into this work that you're doing now and the full transition process of moving into work that was meaningful to you and that you really most enjoyed. And it's a very powerful story. So I encourage you all to go out to her website, GinaMorata.com, and find that. I will tweet this out later so you can find it, in addition to all the other links of stories we've talked about on the program today. And so how can, they're like, okay, here's what I want. Here's what I think I want. And they're starting to ask for that. And they're starting to identify the things that they want. And so, and what about jobs though, that don't require a change? What if you're in your current job and you just want to make it a better one, or maybe it's not as fun as it used to be or something like that? How can you change a situation you're already in?
Right. So there might be a couple of things going on. One, you could be in your own mindset or an environment that is kind of dragging you down. You know, did you ever walk into a room and there's kind of, you know, people with negative attitudes in that space. And so you start to feel that too. So one thing to check out is, you know, is your environment in some way not a fit? And I've taken many clients through transitions that weren't a new career, but it was a new environment and they needed to be in a new space. But there's also checking between your own ears, right? Are there certain negative attitudes that you're carrying that might be preventing you from fully expressing and having your greatest joy? So there's both an internal examination and an external examination. And we all have to do this, whether it's our job or our marriage, a relationship with a friend, that we really, you know, it's not like we just walk around and it's joyful and easy. There's a process and our own responsibility to create that joy.
There's some numbers that you shared earlier that I think this is really stark, because when we think about this topic, we think about only the very dire cases of people that are really miserable, the people that just walk around with a, you know, storm cloud over their head in the workplace. But in fact, more than half, 52% of the U.S. workforce, upon being polled, reports they're not into it. They're not totally happy. And about 7 out of 10 workers say that they are not as fully engaged in the work they're doing as possible. That's most people, 7 out of 10 workers. That's pretty much everybody.
Yes.
So this is epidemic at this point.
It is, absolutely. And I would say the mildest version of it is somebody who's like, well, I'm just kind of bored with my job. But it really does range to, I mean, I ask people how they're feeling when they show up to my workshops or when they show up to meet with me. And I hear things like dread on the way to work. Exhaustion. And so it has ranges and depths and with many people. And I see it more and more and more in the high level professions where people are getting absolutely burned out. And it is at that point a real problem where we're talking about disease onset. We're talking about emotional stress that is going to cause deeper harm, not only to them, but to their families and the life that they really are trying to create even outside of their work.
I think burnout is such an overlooked topic of discussion, and I think people should really take it a lot more seriously. A few weeks ago on the show, we were talking with Dr. John Duffy about vacation and recharge, and he said something that was so powerful to me. He said, it used to be, even just like 8 or 10 years ago, maybe even less than that, it used to be the case that after about 48 hours, our brains neural passageways would begin to recharge on vacation. And now, in our very hyper-connected world that we are in, where we're constantly accessible, we're constantly being, you know, we hear pings on our phone and all these that with all of them carry a potential hit of dopamine with an email or a text or some other good news. It takes 4 to 5 days to really begin to calm, soothe, and repair those neural passageways. And none of us are taking vacation like that. Most people are like, oh, I got to burn some vacation at the end of the year. I'll just take some Fridays off. And that's not doing any good.
Not surprised.
I think that burnout is very, very real. And I think that's leading to a lot of unhappiness, where people don't even get a chance to check in with themselves really about what they're feeling about their jobs or what they want to do. I think that's a big, serious issue.
And this is a cultural issue. This is, you know, there's pride that we take in working hard. There's this sense that, you know, FaceTime is so important, that you must be at the office, that you must show up. And there are some new perspectives coming in about this in, you know, forward-thinking companies like Google, companies that are really looking at, wow, we want people's creative potential. We want their minds here. We need them to be not just drones showing up at their job. Companies that are like that are beginning to really look at, how do we change this?
That's good. I'm hoping more and more companies are taking that very seriously. So in addition to your first step of people asking for what they want as the initial thing of trying to kind of put it out there to try to improve their jobs, which I can imagine that could be something that could take almost an immediate impact. If you walked in and said, well, what I really want is this job, and having that conversation with your supervisor could be very powerful, and you could see almost immediate results, I got to think. But this is the work that you do, and you connect with people and help them to connect with what they really want so they have very happy, joyful lives in their workplaces. But I understand that you have a very playful offer for people to ask for what they want. So tell us what in the world that means.
I do. I do. Okay, so I wrote a little ditty.
Oh,
I wrote
good.
A little song.
We don't sing enough on this show.
Well, it's in the spirit of the 4th of July.
All right, lay it on us.
And so this is like a general asking for career happiness to open up within ourselves. So it's like, you know, listen to me as I sing it. I'm not a great singer, but I'm going to do it anyway. Because
Excellent.
This is what it's about, like being playful and opening yourself
yeah.
up to anything.
And we never sing on the Business Lunch, so let's do this.
Right. So I'm going to sing this song, and if you're listening, just soak it up as someone who's dreaming to do what you really love, okay?
All right.
And so it goes to the tune of Let Freedom Ring.
Okay.
In honor of the holiday. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay. My career 'tis of thee, relieve my misery, of thee I sing. Place where my joy has died, place where I swallowed pride, wake every dream alive, let freedom ring. Yeah.
Lovely. We really do not hear enough singing here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You are the first, I think, to sing
yes.
on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and we appreciate that. My friends, can you imagine a more playful and fun coach in your life that could possibly ever bring you more joy and happiness? I cannot. And so if you would like to contact Gina Murata, the genius guru, to find a more heartfelt and exciting career path, please do so. Her website is GinaMurata.com, and you can find her on social media. We are going to take a quick break, get you the news, and turn you over to King John back in just a bit on 720 WGN.